And of this wondrous mystery, he said, angel bent down low to look at it. Hidden in the heart of God, as God dealt with His people throughout the Old Testament, not even the angels would understand that God would not only make this oracle people out of Abram become the fruit of His harvest in eternity, He would build up that vacuum in heaven and fill it with a church, the wild olive branch. It's a mystery. Angels bent down, they caught glimpses but didn't understand, and prophets sought to comprehend the mystery of Paul, and to Paul was given. That's why I say I'm a Paulinist. Like any other description of my theology. To Paul was given the mystery of the kingdom, that he might reveal to the Gentile church that we, the olive branch, have a hope that is eternal. But these prophecies in the book of Revelation, and these prophecies in Daniel, are prophecies to the old olive branch, the one that will be grafted on when God takes the church, the wild olive branch that has the new life flowing from the root of God's tree of promise. We've gone home. Now, understand that. You'll know why all the imagery of Daniel is not world history. It's world history in relation to Israel as a people. It is kingdoms that affect Israel. Nebuchadnezzar's image starts with the kingdom holding them in bondage. The Babylonian head of gold, the Medo-Persian kingdom of silver, two parts that would follow, the Grecian kingdom of brass, the Roman Empire of iron, the reconstituted 10 kingdoms of the Roman Empire and the toads. Those are only the kingdoms. You're not going to read anything about the Aztecs, the Incas, the Ming Dynasty, the historic kingdoms of India. You're not going to read anything about tribal history in Africa. You're not going to get an explanation of the monuments on Easter Island. It is the kingdoms that affect Israel. It's not world history. It's the Babylonian, the Medo-Persian, the Grecian, the Roman, and the reconstituted Roman Empire. It treats the world as though the center of it is Jerusalem. Understand that. The images that Daniel sees rise out of the sea of human confusion. The lion, Nebuchadnezzar's empire, the bear rising higher on one side, the Medo-Persian, the leopard moving so fast it doesn't seem to touch the ground, the Grecian with four heads, his generals, the nondescript beast that crushes everything, the Roman with the horns growing out, the 10 kingdoms. Then he'll specify it. Out of those 10 kingdoms, as we've been teaching, will rise up a little horn. Let's go to that. Seventh chapter of Daniel. A little horn rises up among the horns of this fourth beast, which is the Roman Empire, reconstituted into 10 kingdoms of its original group. I considered the horns, verse 8 of chapter 7 says, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things. This little horn is going to come out of the old Grecian empire, the old leopard empire. He doesn't necessarily come out of the section of the 10 kings. He will uproot 3 of the 10 kings. The end will come, Daniel's revelations say, in the time of the ten kings. One will rise up, uproot three of them, and the other seven will give him power. But they will be cast down. The ten horns, the 20th verse says, and the 21st, and the 23rd, and the 24th verse are kingdoms. Ten kings that will arise. The seventh kingdom to persecute Israel. Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persian, Grecian, Roman, the reconstituted ten kings. That's the seventh one, 24th verse. Another shall rise after them. That's the eighth one. He's the one that will uproot three and be given power by the other seven. He shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue three kings. That's the uprooting of the horns. And the other seven will give him power. Go to the eighth chapter. There Daniel just talks about two kingdoms that oppress Israel. He talks about the ram and a goat with a notable horn between his eyes. The angel that interprets it says the ram is the Medo-Persian kingdom. The goat, he tells them what it is. The ram which thou sawest, verse 20, having two horns, are the kings of Media and Persia. The rough goat is the king of Grecia. The great horn that's between his eyes is the first king. Now that being broken, Alexander the Great, whereas four stood up for it, his four generals, as history shows us, four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power. They're not sons. They don't stand in Alexander's kingdom power by virtue of inheriting his kingdom. The four generals seize it, and in one great battle it breaks into four kings. Not in his power, but in their own, in the latter time of their kingdom. Now, this is what causes some people to try to make all of this prophecy of Daniel 8, Daniel 10, Daniel 11 happen before Christ came the first time. Because they say the Grecian kingdom was broken and conquered by Rome. Therefore, they say all of these things had to happen in the dying days of the Grecian Empire before Rome finally conquered it and Jesus came the first time. That's because they won't put a gap between the 69th and the 70th week. It's because they fail to understand what God makes clear in the book of Revelation, the 17th chapter. I can move this fast because I've spoken on these subjects previous. If you're listening today for the first time, get the tapes of the previous ones. Antichrist's kingdom at the end will be a beast out of the abyss, a demon prince under Satan that once ruled over the Grecian Empire, has been locked up in the bottomless pit throughout the history days since Greece fell, and will be released in the last day to put supernatural power behind Antichrist, who is ruling over a reconstituted Roman Empire, but comes up in the three-horn area of the old Grecian Empire. It's only as you understand that Antichrist's kingdom will be headed in supernatural power by the same demoniac prince that ruled over Alexander the Great's kingdom. Only as you understand that will you be able to understand what Revelation 17 says, the beast that thou sawest. This is a beast that came out of the bottomless pit. The beast that thou sawest was. That means he existed on this earth at one time and is not. Which means while John is sitting there writing it, he's not there. And shall ascend out of the bottomless pit. and go into perdition. He's going to be let out again. That prince of Grecia is the one that in the 9th chapter of the book of Daniel, nay, the 10th chapter of the book of Daniel, as the angel came to answer Daniel's prayers, he had been fought against and resisted by the evil demoniac prince of Persia, the supernatural force behind that kingdom. Now that the angel is with Daniel, he says, I'm going to go back now and fight that prince of Persia. And when I leave him, when I'm gone forth, lo, the prince of Grecia shall come. That's the beast that was. When the angel that answers Daniel's prayer defeats the evil beast, the prince of Persia, no doubt one of those locked up at the river Euphrates that'll come forth. When that prince of Persia was defeated, that gave the power to the Medo-Persian kingdom, it's as a vacuum created. And though earthly forces are moving, Alexander the Great, he was a military genius, but it wasn't just military genius. The supernatural power behind the Medo-Persian empire was gone and into the vacuum, moving so fast that Daniel saw that leopard look like it didn't touch the ground. Came the Grecian kingdom, and the prince of Grecia empowered him. Now, when that prince of Grecia is defeated, because the prince of Rome that empowered that evil force out of Rome, and the nondescript beast comes to trample it under, all that's left are earthly kingdoms. The evil prince of Grecia is put in a bottomless pit that Rome might now conquer and be ruling when Jesus comes. Understand that, and you'll then be able to understand why that in this 8th and 10th and 11th chapters, we suddenly have leaped across the olive branch, wild olive branch church history. We've leaped across the gap between the cutting off of Jesus to the restoring again of the old olive branch. And in the time of tribulation, the prince of evil that was the ruler of Greece behind Alexander the Great, the prince of evil, the prince of Grecia, that was defeated when the prince of Rome came and was locked up in the bottomless pit, will be let out in that final 7 years, in the last 3.5 years of it, to empower Antichrist in his earthly rule. Then you can make sense. Verse 22 of the 8th chapter. Four stood up in the latter time of their kingdom. That's the Grecian kingdom. When the transgressors are come to the full, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up. His power shall be mighty, not by his own power, no. That beast will come out of the pit again. He shall destroy the mighty ones, is the literal translation, and shall prosper and practice and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. And through his policy also he shall cause craft to prosper by his hand or in his hand. And he shall magnify himself in his heart and by peace shall destroy many, coming in on that white horse originally. He shall also stand up against the prince of princes. That's Jesus himself. But he shall be broken without hand, because Jesus will come and the sword of his mouth will destroy him. You need to put on the 23rd verse there, that the gap has occurred. We're now into the tribulation. We're into the Grecian kingdom of the latter days, restored when that beast comes out of the pit. Now go to the 10th chapter. 70 weeks are determined. 26th verse, after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. That ends the 483rd year of God dealing in the prophecy of Daniel's 70 weeks. And the people of the prince that shall come, that's Antichrist, shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with a flood. And unto the end of the war, desolations are determined. And he shall confirm the covenant. This is Antichrist. He shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. He will come in peacefully. He will make a covenant with the Jews for 7 years. And they'll think their problems are solved. And he will be viewed as the man of peace with a bow and no arrow. In the midst of the week, 3.5 years in, about the time of the sixth trumpet into the seventh trumpet, the six seals were opened, or the seven seals were opened, six trumpets blow. In the middle of the week now, the time of the seventh trumpet and before the seven vials. In the midst of the week, he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. And for the overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate, even until the consummation. And that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. In the 11th chapter, God stops talking in symbol. In the first year of Darius the Mede, the angel now that strengthened Michael in those battles with the evil princes in Persia said, "Now I'm going to show thee the truth. Behold, there shall stand up yet three kings in Persia. The fourth shall be richer than they all. By his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Grecia." You have no trouble in history if you know your history, knowing who that is. That's the Xerxes. This king finally decided to go against Greece. "And a mighty king shall stand up," third verse, that's Alexander the Great, "that shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. And when he shall stand up, his kingdom shall be broken and shall be divided toward the four winds of heaven." No longer four heads on a leopard. No longer horns. Prose now is describing history in advance from the mouth of an angel. Alexander hasn't even showed up. Xerxes has not yet attacked Greece. But Xerxes, that fourth king that is prophesied here of the Medo-Persian Empire, will stir up that he-goat of Alexander the Great. You read your history, you will find that the excuse that Alexander used for invading the Medo-Persian Empire was the action of Xerxes against Greece. But the angel prophesied it before it ever happened. Now instead of four generals, four heads, it's four winds of heaven. Not to his posterity, even though it's history written in advance, in defiance of every rule of history in that land. The successors of Alexander will not be his posterity, not according to his dominion, which he ruled, for his kingdom shall be plucked up, even for others, beside those. And the king of the south shall be strong, that's Egypt, one of his princes, and he shall be strong above him and have dominion. His dominion shall be a great dominion. History reads through all of this. Seleucid went to Ptolemy's court in Egypt, left Babylon escaping, became strong in Egypt until he became stronger than the Ptolemies and took over the old Seleucid portion of the kingdom that includes Turkey, Syria, Iraq, Iran, all of that area that is the Grecian portion of the Middle Eastern world where the Arab nations are now struggling. Seleucid is that prince that came out of Egypt, having gone there escaping from Babylon. In the end of the years, they shall join themselves together. And it tells the history that follows of the Seleucids and the Ptolemies in their various alliances. But we got the gap coming up, friend, because in the describing of the king of the north and the king of the south through this whole 11th chapter that one of these days I'm going to really be able to concentrate on, you come to the time of the end. Verse 40. You come to the king in verse 36 that describes traits that can only be Antichrist. In verse 29, at the time appointed, he shall return. Somewhere beginning about from the 21st verse on is where I break it. There shall stand up in his estate a raiser of taxes. About the 20th to the 21st verse, is where the 69th and 70th week breaks. And suddenly you leap into the 70th week. And you're talking about the time of the end when Antichrist comes on the scene. He'll do according to his will. He shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god. Verse 36, he shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods. He shall prosper till the indignation shall be accomplished. Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any god, for he shall magnify himself above all. It's the most detailed definition of Antichrist anywhere in the book. But in his estate shall he honor the God of forces, and a God whom his fathers knew not shall be honored, shall he honor with gold and silver, and with precious stones and pleasant things. Thus shall he do in the most strongholds, with a strange God, whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many, and shall divide the land for gain. And at the time of the end shall the king of the south. That's why you're seeing Egypt. Sadat thought he figured it out. God chose Sadat to divide Egypt from the rest of that Arabian axis and isolate it, because the king of Egypt is going to be at war in the end against the king of the north that will come out of either northern Iraq or eastern Syria, in an alliance of those Arabian nations called the Assyrian. As the Grecian Empire is restored in the time of the tribulation, Egypt will be at war with him. At the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships. And he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. Though he made a covenant with the Jews, he shall enter also into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. Now listen, I'm at a phase that you'll remember when I started this Revelation series, where I had to literally pull your skull apart as we move into a new dimension and paint it with broad strokes that I'll keep painting before I bring it down to precision. I started out with the woman, Israel, during the tribulation, that when Satan is cast out of the heavenlies in the middle of the week, he will with fury seek to attack this ingraftation of the old olive branch back on again. He will cause Antichrist to break his covenant of peace in the middle of the week, and he will with fury go against Israel. But God has prepared a place for them in the wilderness. And though Antichrist will conquer that Middle Eastern world, there will be a place prepared to which this woman can flee. I have one overriding concept in all of these messages. Can we see that God keeps His hand on history, and when He says something, He's going to do it? We can understand that. We can sure believe Him to take care of us. That's the point. Here back in Daniel, as he painted with broad sweeps the nations that would oppress Israel, as he stretched apart the dying of the Grecian Empire, while he deals with the mystery of the church and lets the Roman Empire rise, and comes to a reconstituted Roman Empire that will in fact be dominated by the Grecian portion of that empire, and a ruler that is empowered by the release of that satanic, evil prince of Grecia that will empower him. Now the dragon, Satan, the beast out of the abyss, that is that lieutenant of Satan, the demon power that ruled Alexander the Great's kingdom and will be released again to rule Antichrist, the literal ruler Antichrist, empowered by these supernatural forces, will turn on that woman, Israel, that's been brought back and thinks they have peace because Antichrist rode in on a white horse and an arrow with no bow. He made a 7-year covenant with them in the middle of the week after the 6th trumpet blows. The beast is released. The dragon is beat out of heaven by Michael. He's going to turn on that woman. This ruler, Antichrist, empowered by that demon force, shall enter also into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. But, listen, these shall escape out of His hand. He's overthrowing many countries. But these shall escape. Why these? It's not Israel. It's a Middle Eastern land. Little piddling countries down there near the desert area where the Israelites wandered around. These shall escape out of His hand. Some people say Antichrist is going to conquer the whole world. He's not even going to conquer these two countries. Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. Can you imagine that? God is describing the flow of the most powerful kingdoms in the Western world. Here is a prince of evil, empowered with a beast out of the bottomless pit, and empowered by the dragon Satan himself, conquering the Holy Land. And these escape. Edom, Moab. Let me tell you something. If you miss the rapture, catch a one-way ticket to Edom, Moab, or Ammon. In fact, buy it now. Lay it away somewhere. In fact, if you intend to live so reckless that you may not make it, go buy some land and eat them. Moab or the children of Ammon. You're going to be here, George. You better get your real estate now. He shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. He shall have power over the treasures of gold. We showed you last night a reconstitution of those Arabian nations. You were watching on festival. Here's Libya and Syria, separated now from Iraq and Iran and Jordan and Saudi Arabia. Well, Egypt is isolated, but they're not going to escape. Antichrist will conquer them. He shall have power over the treasures of gold and of silver and over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. But tidings out of the east, kings of the east are going to give him trouble. And out of the north, that great Russian confederacy, going to get news about it, shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly to make away many. And he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. He'll set up his kingdom right there at Jerusalem. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him, because Jesus will come with 10,000s, thousands of his saints in Revelation 19. Why Edom, Moab, and Ammon? Huh? Go back to where I started. If you slept through the whole message, you should wake up right now. You've heard the whole message. This woman that is Israel fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God that they should feed her there 3.5 years, 1,260 days. 14th verse. To the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place. That's why I said underline, her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the face of the serpent. And the dragon will breathe out a force of men to pursue them, and the earth will swallow them up as they flee into Edom, Moab, and the children of Ammon. Because Antichrist didn't conquer that area. God held it. Now, take these final few minutes and let me show you something. Know this, that Bozrah, Petra, some of you, when you go to the Holy Land, go down to Petra. That's the area. When you read of Bozrah, who is this that cometh from Edom? What are the places in Daniel? Say it to me again. What are they? What are those places in Daniel that Antichrist doesn't take? Edom, Moab, and the chief of the children of Ammon. Isaiah sees the end in Isaiah 66. Who is this that cometh from Edom with dyed garments from Bozra? The answer comes back, I that speak in righteousness, mighty to save. Wherefore art thou red in thine apparel, like him that treadeth in the winepress? I have trodden the winepress alone. Of the people there was none with me. Those Israelites went out there to fight for their deliverance. God comes in the person of His Son, and He wipes out Antichrist. Bozrah and Edom is that hidden place. Let me take you to Isaiah 16. I want you to listen to me. You write them down. Read them yourself later. Don't take the time to turn. Let me do it. Isaiah 16. I just want to make one point today. God knows what He's doing and does exactly what He says. 16th chapter of Isaiah, verse 1 to 5. You need to write it in the margin alongside the 6th verse and the 14th verse of Revelation 12. Because in the book of Revelation, all we're reading about is that God has her place prepared. We read in Daniel 11 that when Antichrist, in his final conquering surge across that land, conquers all of it, he misses Edom, Sam, Moab. You're going to buy real estate. Well, I guess you're not interested in buying real estate because you're going to be gone. But for your unsaved relatives, you ought to be able to spit it out in a hurry. Say, if you call up one day and I'm gone, get out of here. Sell everything you got and go to Edom, Moab, or the Ammonite territory. Got it? Get it clear. Edom, Moab, and the children of Ammon. Now put these verses of Scripture alongside that. Send ye the lamb to the ruler of the land of Selah, from Selah to the wilderness, unto the mount of the daughter of Zion. For it shall be that as a wandering bird cast out of the nest, so shall the daughters of Moab, so the daughters of Moab shall be at the fords of Arnon. Take counsel, execute judgment, make thy shadow as the night in the midst of the noonday. Hide the outcasts. Bewray not him that wandereth. Let mine outcast dwell with thee, Moab. Be thou a covert to them from the face of the spoiler. For the extortioner is at an end. The spoiler ceases. The oppressors are consumed out of the land. And in mercy shall the throne be established, and he shall sit upon it in truth, in the tabernacle of David, judging and seeking judgment and hasting righteousness. God gives a warning way back there in the 16th chapter of Isaiah to the people of Moab. Stay on your alert, because if my people ever show up on your borders running from the spoiler, hide them. That's your hope, Moab. It goes on to say, we've heard of the pride of Moab. He's very proud, even his haughtiness. Howl for Moab. But God gives that miserable people a chance. And it's as though He's saying, if you ever see my people running into your territory, receive them, because the end is at hand. Your salvation, dumb Moab, dumb Edom, dumb children of Ammon. When Antichrist goes by, they're probably going to sit down there and say, how great we are. He didn't bother us. They're her place. The woman, as God looks out for His own. Go to Isaiah 26, verse 20. I've got my Isaiah torn in pieces. Well, I can't read that frayed page. I'm down to 19. It's torn off. 21. Ye that dwell in dust, come, my people, the 20th verse. enter thou into thy chambers, and shut thy door about thee. Hide thyself, as it were, for a little moment, until the indignation be overpast. For behold, the Lord cometh out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. Too much tearing of that page. Just know that that's part of the hiding away. And you ought to have it written in the margin. Read Isaiah 63, 1-5. I've got it written in the margin of my Bible. Right alongside the 14th verse of the 12th chapter. 63rd chapter, 1-5. Who is this? I quoted it earlier. Said 66 and 63rd. Who is this that cometh from Edom with dyed garments from Bozrah? Same as Petra. It's Edom. This that is glorious in his apparel, traveling in the greatness of his strength. Answer, I that speak in righteousness, mighty to save. Wherefore art thou red in thine apparel, and thy garments like him that treadeth in the wine fat? I have trodden the winepress alone, and of the people there was none with me. For I will tread them in mine anger, trample them in my fury. Their blood shall be sprinkled upon my garments, and I will stain all my raiment. For the day of vengeance is in mine heart, and the year of my redeemed is come. Or what am I saying? God provided the place for them in the wilderness. His vengeance on these people is in Psalm chapter 60. I preached on that psalm once in a different context. Find Psalm chapter 60. Moab is my washpot. Over Edom will I cast out my shoe. 8th verse. Philistia, triumph thou because of me. Who will bring me into the strong city? Who will lead me into Edom? Wilt not thou, O God, which hast cast us off, and thou, O God, which didst not go out with our armies, give us help from trouble, for vain is the help of man. Through God we shall do valiantly, for he it is that shall tread down our enemies. Who will lead me into Edom? That's a messianic psalm. I don't have the time to preach on it all the way. Read Ezekiel 20. Write that down in the margin. Well, I preached on that. It's probably gone from my Bible, too. Ezekiel 20. Third verse. As I live, saith the Lord God, surely with a mighty hand and with a stretched out arm and with fury poured out will I rule over you. And I will bring you out from the people and will gather you out of the countries wherein ye are scattered with a mighty hand and with a stretched out arm and with fury poured out. And I will bring you into the wilderness of the people, and there will I plead with you face to face. Like as I pleaded with your fathers in the wilderness of the land of Egypt, so will I plead with you, saith the Lord God. And I will cause you to pass under the rod, and I will bring you into the bond of the covenant. And I will purge out from among you the rebels and them that trespass against me, and I will bring them forth out of the country where they sojourn. And they shall not enter into the land of Israel. And ye shall know that I am the Lord. Go on. Read it clear through to the 44th verse. I'll gather you out of the countries. This passage, like the others, is taking them into Edom. Hosea 2, verse 14. Let's read that one. Therefore, behold, I will allure her and bring her into the wilderness and speak comfortably unto her. And I will give her her vineyards from thence and the valley of Acre for a door of hope. And she shall sing there, as in the days of her youth and as in the days when she came up out of the land of Egypt. Why not? Because the army that comes out of the mouth of the dragon, the earth will open up and swallow them up. And it shall be at that day, saith the Lord, that thou shalt call me Ishi, and shall call me no more Baali. For I will take away the names of Balaam out of her mouth, and they shall no more be remembered by their name. And in that day will I make a covenant for them with the beasts of the fields and with the fowls of the heaven, with the creeping things of the ground. And I'll break the bow and the sword and the battle out of the earth, and will make them to lie down safely. And I will betroth thee unto me forever. Yea, I will betroth thee unto me in righteousness and in judgment and in loving kindness and in mercies. That's the end of time. I will bring her into the wilderness again and again. I haven't got time to go for the rest of them, because I'll be on this subject for many weeks as I talk about the woman and the man-child and the last 3.5 years of the tribulation as God hides them away and leaves only the unbelieving remnant in Jerusalem for Satan to persecute. What's the point of this whole message? God wrote the history of the world back there with Daniel. But he put a little footnote on. Antichrist. Let me tell you, you'd think Antichrist, when he comes along, be smart enough to read the Bible. If I were Antichrist, first place I'd conquer would be Moab, Ammon, and Edom. And I'd get the hell beat out of me. Because no matter what he does, Satan and the beast out of the pit empowering Antichrist, he will never conquer Edom, Moab, the children of Ammon. Because God just drew a ring around that silly bunch of heathen. And way back in the Old Testament, he said, when you see our people show up on your borders, you better receive them. And with wings like an eagle, before that seventh trumpet blows and the vials of God's wrath pour out, that woman is going to flee into the wilderness prepared for her. And she'll stay there through the storm, and Jesus will visit them there and will come with dyed garments from Bozrah in that vision seen by Isaiah as he comes with his saints to deliver that woman that's been hid for a time, a times and a half a time. 3.5 years she hides in the wilderness. Ammon, Moab, and Edom. God not only writes the broad history of the world, empires of Egypt and Assyria, Babylon and Medo-Persian and Grecian and Roman and a reconstituted kingdom of Antichrist. He writes the history of his little nest in the wilderness. That even though this olive branch had to be lopped off, and even though they've been faithless and crucified the Son of Glory in the time of his wrath, he has a hiding place for them to escape to. We're all beneficiaries of God's grace. That's why I opened today saying, what are you scared of? You don't even have to be here when it happens. You don't have to worry about buying real estate and bomb shelters in Moab. The church would be gone. You know, I brought with myself today because I'd hoped to get into the 11th chapter of Daniel in more detail. That distinguished pulpit commentary, as they're reading the 11th chapter about the Grecian Empire in its last days, and they say, this purports to be an account of an expedition taken by Epiphanes against Ptolemy as they try to find something in history. Of this there is not a trace, however. No such expedition occurred. What explanation is to be given of that? They don't have one. I did. The 70th week hadn't started yet. It's round the bend. And those expeditions are Antichrist's expedition. But his best efforts will not conquer Moab, Edom, and the children of Ammon. His blind spot will make him dash to Ethiopia, Egypt, and Libya. But the nest is there. Michael will throw Lucifer out. He'll attack that woman. She'll flee to that nest. God always has his way of escape, even in those dark days, for those that trust him and obey the simple promise